You're tuned here in to Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM here in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. This is the Grant County Coronavirus Update. My name is Marcus, and I'll be your host today. On this week's Coronavirus Update, we'll be airing some replays of interviews that took place back in December of 2020 as a glimpse back to where we were just 7 months ago. But first, the news. The New Mexico Department of Health on Tuesday announced 746 new cases of coronavirus from last week, for a total of 203,151 cases, with 13 additional deaths, for a total of 4,264 deaths in New Mexico. 105 individuals remain hospitalized here in New Mexico, which is a decrease from 28 from last week. As of Tuesday, 65.6% of New Mexicans have received their first dose of the two-shot vaccine for COVID-19, while 55.8% have been fully vaccinated. This is according to the COVID-19 vaccine dashboard. In Grant County, the Department of Health reported 8 new COVID cases from last week, for a total of 1,726 cases. One death has been reported in Grant County from last week. And 41 people in Grant County have lost their lives due to COVID-19 since the pandemic began more than a year ago. As of Tuesday, the Department of Health also reports that 63.9% of Grant County residents are partially vaccinated and 57% are fully vaccinated. A free vaccination clinic will be taking place June 5th in Goff Park from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The New Mexico National Guard and New Mexico Department of Health have teamed up to sponsor this free vaccination clinic, and all three COVID-19 vaccines will be offered for free. The Pfizer vaccine, which is currently approved down to age 12, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a single-dose shot, and the Moderna vaccine will be available. HMS and Silver Healthcare will be assisting in the effort, and they will also be having a bicycle helmet giveaway from the Silver City Fire Department and a bike safety rodeo from the Silver City Police Department. Find out more at vaccinegrantcounty.gov or call Town of Silver City Assistant Fire Chief Jeff Fell. His number is 575-956-1272. Again, that's 575-956-1272. The New Mexico Department of Health Secretary Dr. Tracy Collins and Human Services Department Secretary Dr. David Scrace will provide a COVID-19 webinar update today, Wednesday, June 2nd at 1 p.m., and will include an update to the state's red to turquoise reopening plan, which was updated last 2 weeks ago. As of May 17th, 32 of the 33 New Mexico counties are at the turquoise level, including Grant County. The state of New Mexico has launched a sweepstakes campaign in an attempt to get residents vaccinated. The campaign, called Vax to the Max, requires participants to be vaccinated and features a grand prize of $5 million, the single largest vaccination prize in the United States, as well as a 5-week drawing beginning mid-June, in which 4 winners from 4 separate regions of New Mexico will receive $250,000. Staycation packages will also be given out. To sign up or find out more, go to vaxtothemaxnm.org. That's vax2themaxnm.org. According to officials, funding for the sweepstakes comes from the state's portion of the American Rescue Plan stimulus. Hidalgo Medical Services has opened COVID-19 community clinics here in Grant County and Hidalgo County. They are walk-in clinics with no appointment necessary for COVID-19 vaccinations and COVID-19 testing. In Grant County, the COVID-19 community clinic will be located at 1304 East 32nd Street here in Silver, the hours being 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., closed from noon to 1 for a lunch break, and will be open 5 days a week, open one Saturday a month, and with the following Monday closure. You can also, if you're in Hidalgo County, you can go to 109 Poplar Street in Lordsburg. Hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., closed from 12 to 1 for a lunch break. Their hours of operation are open, rotating days of the week, open one Saturday a month. For more information, visit the HMS website at hms-nm.org. And the New Mexico Department of Health does encourage all New Mexican residents to get their vaccine. A reminder that anyone 16 and up can self-register, with parents being able to sign up their children 12 to 15. Online registration is required, vaccinenm.org. And if you're in Grant County, there is a vaccine hotline set up to assist you and answer any questions. That number, 575-597-7029. Again, 575-597-7029. And to find out ways to get tested here in Grant County, you can go to grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. The New Mexico Department of Health has announced that businesses, nonprofits, religious congregations, community centers, and other organizations can request on-site vaccination events through the new Department of Health web form at getvaxnm.com. Organizations can bring a minimum of 25 people to a vaccination event through a combination of employees, members, family, or members of the surrounding community. They all qualify, and the Department of Health will work with the organization on scheduling. In some cases, the Department of Health may combine multiple requests and create a single event in a given geographical location. Department of Health may also redirect requesting organizations to pre-existing events. The temporary gross receipts tax relief authorized by Senate Bill 1 allows many restaurants, bars, and breweries and similar businesses a gross receipts tax deduction for sales of prepared food and drinks made after March 1st, 2021 and prior to March 1st, 2021 and prior to July 1st, 2021. The tax relief is intended to help businesses that have been especially hit hard by financially during the COVID-19 pandemic. And during the four-month period that the deduction is available, eligible businesses may either choose to not charge gross receipts tax on the deductible receipts or to charge the tax but keep the amount charged. Fast food restaurants are not eligible for the deduction, but mobile food services do qualify. More information, including how the deduction will be claimed, is available on the forms and publications page at tax.newmexico.gov. And the New Mexico Gas Company COVID-19 relief is being provided for small business customers. Qualified accounts will be eligible for a one-time credit of 50 cents for every dollar paid and up to $250, not to exceed the total balance on the account on a first-come, first-served basis. Applications will be accepted through March 31st, 2022, or until all funds have been allocated, whichever comes first. Find out more at nmgco.com/small-business/COVID-relief. And on this week's coronavirus update, as I mentioned earlier, we'll be airing some replays of interviews that took place back in December of 2020 as a glimpse back to where we were just 7 months ago. And in this interview that originally aired on December 16th of last year, GMCR's Jamie Newton speaks with Chris Jepson, a recently retired nurse and health educator, and her husband, Grant County Commissioner Harry Brown, who are recovering from the coronavirus. Jamie talks to them about their experience with the illness, including diagnosis and the experience of being ill and recuperation, plus the emotional impacts on themselves and their family and their friends.
This is the coronavirus update interview of December 16, 2020 on Gila Members Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host for today. My guests are Chris Jepson, a recently retired nurse and health educator, and her husband, Grant County Commissioner Harry Brown, both of whom are recovering from illness due to the coronavirus. Chris and Harry, thanks for being with us on Coronavirus Update.
Jamie, it's really a privilege to be here. Thank you for inviting us, and we're happy to share our stories.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie, and thanks to the whole coronavirus outreach crew. You guys are doing an amazing job.
Thank you. Well, both of you became ill with the coronavirus during Thanksgiving week, and now about 3 weeks later, you're pretty well over it. Your experiences were similar in some ways and quite different in others. Please give us a chronology of your illnesses, the onset and symptoms, testing and diagnosis, and recuperation.
Yeah, I'll go first, Jamie, because I was the first to get ill. I got ill on a Monday. I did not recognize it as coronavirus. You would think all of our antennae have been out for months that I would have immediately thought that was the case, but I had no fever. I had no sore throat or cough. What I had was brain fuzz. I could not think clearly. And, you know, part of not being able to think clearly is not being fully aware that you can't think clearly. So I came home early from work on Monday and I said, I really don't feel like I got much done today, but I didn't put my finger on that being an issue. I woke up the next day. I had a really tight back. So that would be symptom number two. Again, no fever. We have an oximeter, right? Something you slip on your finger. You can measure your blood oxygen level. We had been in the habit of doing that pretty regularly anyway. It was fine. I went to work. I had a more or less normal day, but the backache continued all week. So in my case, that was really the overwhelming symptom. It was a really tight back. I had to take ibuprofen to sleep at night. This is something that has affected me in the past. So again, I did not immediately say, oh, I've got the Rona, right? I did not think that's what it was. So Chris, you want to take over?
Sure. So we actually had an outdoor, very small family Thanksgiving, 6 feet apart, and put all the regular precautions in place. And I woke up on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, and felt really horrible. I had a fever that was in the low hundreds, ached all over, lungs felt like they were on fire, with just a heaviness in my chest, and really felt pretty sure that it would be appropriate to get tested for coronavirus immediately. We called Silver Healthcare, and great folks there just arranged a time to come in and told us where to park in the back of the clinic here in Silver. And well, protective equipment, two healthcare providers came to the car. They were able to do our nose swabs, and actually a nurse practitioner listened to our chest and made some recommendations if our symptoms got worse. My oxygen saturation had gone below 95. So just to clarify, when Harry said before that his didn't seem to be affected, our kind of parameter was 95 and above felt like, okay, we're okay. But if it started to dip below 95% oxygen on the oximeter, then that was more concerning. And mine was staying below 95%. So we stayed hunkered down for the rest of Friday and Saturday. We informed those we were closest with that we thought we might be positive, that we got tested. Our two sons communicated with Harry's mom and waited to hear what our test results were. Harry, do you want to pick it up?
We do good tag teaming. So we expected we'd get our test results on Monday, but it was on Sunday morning. We woke up, and I'm in the habit, of course, of making a cup of coffee or two or three. And it's usually one of the highlights of my day is sitting down and sipping my coffee, especially on a Sunday. And it tasted like burnt cardboard. It was horrible. And I said, Chris, something's wrong. This is not good. And she had the presence of mind to pull out some perfumed candles and soaps that we have, friends have given us. We could not smell the strongest perfumed soaps you can imagine, nothing. So that was shocking and pretty confirming, right? We were like pretty sure that we had the coronavirus. And later that day, a little earlier than we had expected, we got a call on a Sunday from Silver Health, and they let us know that sure enough, our tests were positive, which by then we had expected. So we called back the folks that we had told that we suspected that we had the virus, and told them that indeed we were positive. And if we had spent any, you know, time at all in their presence, we suggested that they should get themselves tested and check for symptoms and don't spread it. Quarantine until you find out whether you've been affected or not. Chris?
Well, so to clarify, we really had not been around anyone without following the guidelines of wearing masks, being 6 feet apart. And Harry and I were really the only people in each other's sort of COVID pod. So even our sons that we took those precautions around, being outside for Thanksgiving was just an exception to be with Harry's mom and her partner. So it felt like we'd been careful, but we still went through, in my experience anyway, just an emotional upheaval of who we might have affected. The other thing I wanted to add is that we started on Friday. So before we got our results, we started sort of a cocktail of supplements that were recommended. And so zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, and something called quercetin, which is an antioxidant that we got from the local co-op easily, without going in the co-op. It was delivered with the toss to Harry. So Sunday we really realized like, okay, we've got to just up our absolute isolation.
So clearly you were both very careful people. Chris, you're a nurse, and Harry, you're an elected official. You've been paying a lot of attention to the public policy implications of the coronavirus pandemic. So I think one of the implications here is that taking every precaution matters a great deal and reduces risk, and there is no absolute elimination of risk. You were careful not to get the disease and not to pass it around, and yet you did get it. And you then very quickly began to contact people that you might have exposed. Let me just ask, did anyone take steps to do contact tracing to help you find out how you may have gotten this and who might have been infected by you?
Sure, I'll go first. I was contacted on Monday. So we got our official word on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And on Monday, a contact tracer from the State Department of Health contacted me. They did have me go back through all the contacts I could think of for the previous 14 days. But their attention seemed to wane as I got farther and farther back into history. And really, they were focused on people that we may have come into contact with in the previous few days, it seemed to me. But Chris and I had, you know, quite a while by that time, 3 days, to come up with lists of everywhere we may have been. And I might say, you know, we really were careful. We had limited our shopping trips to once a week. And certainly in the meetings I have to go to as a county commissioner, even those that are still in person, I wore a mask constantly. So I think the way you phrase it is exactly right. We know that reduces your risk. Obviously, it does not eliminate your risk.
And part of that risk, I think, is that all of us are around some people in some settings, you especially, Harry Brown, in public meetings where other people either are not wearing masks at all, or they remove their masks in order to speak, or for a little while to get a drink of water several times. There are times when we're around people where the precautions are less complete, and we can't help that.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I understand people who feel they have to remove their mask to speak. It's frustrating to try to speak through that thing. But that is one point of vulnerability in our system. And I had had a couple of meetings over coffee outside, you know, coffee to go, sitting in a park with people. But it's true. When you remove your mask to drink your coffee, you could be vulnerable. And the fact is, you're vulnerable. Even if you're just wearing a mask, you could just get unlucky. Anyway, unlucky, that was my U.S.
And who among us has not at some point thought, oh, I just adjusted my mask and then I rubbed my eye. I shouldn't do that, right? I mean, there are things that we do. So
I suppose that's true.
You've told us a little about how you approached self-care. Obviously, you sheltered in place. You avoided contact with anybody else. You took supplements that are available through outlets like the Silver City Food Co-op. And we have a number of good herbalists around that we can get antiviral tinctures from, whatever we think we want to trust. What about any treatment from healthcare professionals? Were you offered treatment after your diagnosis?
Sure. So the nurse practitioner that I saw at Silver Healthcare did prescribe albuterol inhaler and Flonase. I wasn't feeling that my symptoms, either with congestion, nasal congestion, or even lung, I sort of had a parameter of it, say below 90, that using the albuterol inhaler, which was the recommendation she made as needed, that I would use it. But other than that, my primary doctor at Silver Healthcare had made the same recommendations about supplements when she heard that I wasn't feeling well and was waiting the results of the COVID test, recommended the zinc and the vitamin D and the vitamin C. And then we'd read about quercetin. I also was so appreciative. I didn't mention before, but I had already Bear Creek Herbs Lung Strong and Respirees and some zinc drops from the co-op. Like, you know, all those things just made me feel better. Another step that I took, I know Harry has mentioned that he really didn't have the respiratory symptoms that I had. But I mean, frankly, for good days, I was anxious with my primary goal of I need to stay out of the hospital. And having the oximeter at home really helped me to have in my mind the, as I'm still a nurse, though I'm not working, you know, the parameters of thinking, okay, below 90, if I can't, and then practicing, I had an incentive spirometer, which if you've had a surgery where there was concern that you needed to keep your lungs open, it's a easy technology that requires you deep breathe to keep a little weight lifted with your air. And I just put that on the counter and I used it whenever I didn't feel well. By day four, I was able to do some gentle stretching, which felt so good on my muscles. And I took a nice, not too hot bath that also just helped, like really feeling connected with friends and family as well. Zooming and getting, you know, sort of cheerleading, and people dropped off soup and just were willing to run errands and drop things off. So those were other things that we took into consideration, but no, we did not use any prescription medication in our recovery, and felt lucky that we didn't have to. But I know there's talk of many therapies now that can be useful and keep people out of the hospital.
Social support.
I wanted to add really one thing, Jamie.
Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah. Just because Chris mentioned incentive spirometer, which is not a term a lot of people will be familiar with, in the vein of public health education, a balloon works really well, right? Uh-huh. I've heard you recommend this, Chris. Just get a balloon, blow it up, deflate it, blow it up, deflate it. The point is to exercise your lungs. And I thought that was a really good technique, Chris. That made me feel less anxious about you.
Good to know. So,
and I would add with the balloon, taking the deep breath in fully before you then blow it up is part of keeping those lungs open. All right.
Excellent. People may want to do that even if they're not sick. So social support was very helpful to you. And can you say a little more about the emotional impact of this illness on you and on your close circles of family and friends?
So we had had dinner outside with masks, unless we were eating, and separated as well as we could because we were on other two opposite sides of an 8-foot picnic bench. And we had two separate seats set far away with our two sons and with my mom and her good friend. And so that was the one event that we were terrified we might have just done exactly what we worked so hard to avoid doing for months. So I think that, you know, that was the source of emotional anxiety that you referred to, that we might have really blown it at just the wrong time. We had this social event after really very rarely having anything like that. We had eaten with some other people outdoors, same setup, everybody trying to stay as far away as they could. And this one just happened to occur during a period where it was obvious that I was contagious. I almost surely got my wife sick, right? So that there's that feeling bad already. There was also the fact that with this disease, you don't know what direction it's going to take. And we've all read how common it is that people feel better after a few days of illness. And then a few days later, it turns really bad, right? And there's this cytokine storm where your immune system kicks into overdrive and damages your own organs. And there's the possibility of blood clots. So there was that anxiety as well. I would say that's not normally present when somebody is very ill. We're always worried about the ill person. But I would say this was an added worry in our lives because of the stories we've all heard about how coronavirus can go bad. Chris, did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I certainly am on the same page with feeling so worried about your mom and her partner. But the angst I felt with every call that we had to make and thinking that because of us, people were having to go through the testing, which is uncomfortable. So many people have experienced it multiple times at this point. But, you know, to have to call somebody and say, we may have caused you harm, and now you're going to have to go through something, and the emotional anxiety because we chose to have an outdoor Thanksgiving with intimate family or just with our closest family. So I mean, every person that I contacted, I felt extreme, I guess I would say guilt. And I think most of the people that I contacted were, you know, very gracious. I have been hiking with one friend frequently, one friend, different days, a different friend, like all through coronavirus. I felt so lucky to live in a place where that felt like a safe activity. And I have worn a mask every time, though I was outside, I felt like if I'm hiking on a trail that's single file and I'm behind a person and they're not wearing a mask, I'm breathing their air and vice versa. So I wear a mask when I'm hiking. I've worn a mask when I've run. And I like, without exception, have worn masks. But there, I've been tested. This was the third time during coronavirus pandemic that I have been tested. And every time I was an active nurse the first time, and I thought, I was so careful. I have a bleach spray in the car. I would spray everything down. I would keep everything clean. And I never went into somebody's house, but I would go up to their door with my mask on. And then I thought, would I have to tell every one of those people that I then tested positive because I spent 5 minutes on their front porch? And it was really just, I think as a nurse in particular, you just don't want to do any harm. So thinking that I could have caused harm was really hard when I found out that actually indeed this time I was positive. But the good side of that is, except for our son, one of our sons tested positive without any symptoms and still has not had any symptoms. None of the other people we spent time with. So though something happened, there was a breach in our protective measures that we got it, but we felt pretty proud that we didn't spread it to someone else. So it stopped with us, basically.
Well, thank goodness for that. And I'm hearing that it took quite a bit of courage and love and confidence between yourselves and the family members and friends that you had been around to cope with this illness. We'll conclude our interview for Coronavirus Update for December 16th, 2020 with that. Chris Jepson and Harry Brown, thank you so much for speaking to our listeners about your personal experiences contracting the coronavirus and recovering from it.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for your program.
Yes, thanks for the good work that you do educating our community.
And next up in this interview that originally aired on December 9th of last year, also featuring GMCR's Jamie Newton, he speaks with Dr. Bob Garrett, a psychiatrist at Fort Bayard Medical Center, about the effects of the coronavirus pandemic on long-term care residents and staff and their families and friends, and what all of us can do to minimize additional infections and mitigate negative impacts.
This is the Coronavirus Update interview of December 9, 2020 on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host for today. My guest is Dr. Bob Garrett, a psychiatrist at Fort Bayard Medical Center near Silver City. Dr. Garrett, thanks for being with us on Coronavirus Update.
I'm happy to be here, Jamie. Thank you.
You're a psychiatrist, Dr. Garrett. Our emphasis will be on mental, emotional, and relationship impacts of the coronavirus. But to begin, I'd like you to speak as a medical doctor with extensive experience in long-term care facilities. One of the nation's earliest pandemic hotspots was the Life Care Center in Kirkland, Washington, where 46 people died of the coronavirus between March and August. According to the Silver City Daily Press of December 1st, the Silver City Care Center, with 100 beds and 90 employees, reported 7 deaths due to COVID-19 in November, with 23 staff and 30 residents having tested positive. Let me ask you, are the institutional environments and the resident populations of long-term care facilities especially vulnerable to the spread of infectious diseases? And if so, why?
Yes, they are. And it's because any communal living setting, particularly in a facility that has roommates, such as most nursing homes, have a closeness that we're trying to affect with these distancing, social distancing, and wearing masks. And that is very hard to do in a setting such as a nursing home, both for staff and for the residents.
So overcoming the pandemic is really about what every one of us does. What can family and friends of people in long-term care need to know about how to reduce the risks of infection?
The basic three things that they've talked about in the pandemic over time: wearing a mask, distance 6 feet, and wash your hands as often as possible are the basic things that would help for people not to bring the virus into a nursing home. However, at this time in New Mexico, most nursing homes are locked down, so the family can't visit, but their social support through phone calls or through video media are very important, and contacting their loved ones is very helpful.
We'll return to that particular topic of how people interact with residents of long-term care centers right now. But Dr. Garrett, from your professional knowledge and your years of experience as a psychiatrist in long-term care, what insights stand out for you as most important and timely to share with our listeners about the mental and emotional impacts of the coronavirus pandemic? I'm asking you for a kind of overview.
Yes. Human beings, we're social animals. There's no question about that. And when we have to distance ourselves or be isolated from one another, that causes major consequences in terms of developing fear and hopelessness and helplessness, which we try to avoid by coming in contact with other people. And in the case of the virus, that's unfortunately the thing that makes the virus propagate. Everybody needs to understand that social contact is vitally important. And we understand that in the nursing home setting. And we try and emphasize non-touch caring.
The highly contagious and potentially lethal novel coronavirus has surely transformed patterns and the quality of daily life in long-term care facilities. You've already mentioned isolation, social distancing, there are reduced activities, limits, and right now bans on direct visits with families and friends, and the more subtle impacts such as uncertainty and fear, where there was the reassurance of familiar routines. So, Dr. Bob Garrett, how do changes like these affect the residents you care for? Are they able to adapt to requirements like mask wearing? And how are their families and friends responding?
In general, by communicating with all members who are living in the nursing home and explaining why we're doing what we're doing and how we will go about doing things. There has been, particularly initially in February and March, some consternation among the residents feeling that this is a lot to change. However, as time went on, they got used to it, and they're surprisingly adaptive in terms of how they respond to people in masks. We're also, as a staff, learning to smile more and be more expressive, and so that the members can, the residents can identify us. And also, while the routines have changed somewhat, they're still basically the same. There is no dining without 6-foot distance. There's also less intervention. But because people need care in a nursing home, there's still a lot of hands-on care, even if we're all gloved all the time. So overall, the residents have been, in my mind, remarkably tolerant. And there's a speculation in some of the literature that it's because most of these people have survived many crises in their lives. This is just another crisis that's just extended, and they will get through it, and they, as they have gotten through other crises in the past.
That's encouraging. We think of people in long-term care facilities, many of them as being quite elderly. They're all people who are there because in one way or another, they can't meet their own needs independently, even with the help of family and friends. And I believe it's generally thought that on average, something like 3/4 of the residents in long-term care facilities have at least some cognitive impairment. Can you just speak briefly to the question of how people who may be a little disoriented, have trouble with short-term memory, not know exactly what has just happened in their day, how those people are responding to these changes in routines and the new requirements in order not to be infected with the coronavirus?
You're absolutely right that cognitive impairment means that people will have a failure of memory after they've been explained something. So it's just a matter of repetition and kind staff in input into going over and over things. Once people with lower cognitive function get used to a routine, they usually respond to it. Some people will respond with behavior that's aggressive or fearful, but that's been a very small minority in the population I serve.
I'm glad to hear that. And I'm hearing in your response to that last question that some of what you need to do, by you, I mean all staff, caregiving staff in a long-term care facility, requires more time, greater attention than would have been required if there were fewer demands just to prevent contagion. So we know that the resurgence of the coronavirus right now, December 2020, is beginning to overwhelm healthcare facilities. What impacts do you see on long-term care staff at all levels, Dr. Garrett? Administration, medical staff, support personnel who provide food services, custodial services?
I think you're right to include everyone who serves the residents in the facility because we've been on heightened alert now for 8 or 9 months, and fatigue is setting in. And with, for example, when the county goes above 5%, we have to have nasal swabbing twice a week. We also, that includes the residents as well as the staff. And it's an interference in our ability to interact with people. We also have staff who have families at home who may or may not have coronavirus. And they are suffering from the fact that they have to have a 14-day quarantine, which reduces staff levels. So everybody's working at a heightened level, but it's hard to sustain a crisis mentality when you're fatigued and when there doesn't seem to be an end. Now with the vaccine, there's an end, but it's still going to be 6 months before everything's taken care of.
So Dr. Bob Garrett, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint, and we can anticipate continuing extraordinary demands on everyone, caregiving staff, residents of long-term care facilities, families and friends. What would you like our listeners to remember as highlights of this interview? What are your take-home points?
My take-home points are that we will get past this, but we need to continue to remember that social interaction is very important, and that communication with our loved ones who may be in nursing homes and support actually of the staff. If people know the staff, just give them a pat on the back would be really important because they've been working really hard over this long time. And we have kept down the number in our community, which is the nursing home, by following the masking, social distancing and washing hands routines rather well.
And that will be the story for months to come. That concludes the weekly coronavirus update interview for December 9, 2020 on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. Dr. Bob Garrett, thank you so much for speaking to our listeners.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks to Marcus Hansen, our audio engineer and producer of Coronavirus Update. And thank you for listening and for supporting GMCR and KURU. Be safe and well. For GMCR and KURU, I'm Jamie Newton.